This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Okay, this is what I've been asked to look at this morning. We're trying to do relatively briefly, but it'll give you an update of where we are now. Ooh, there we go. Okay, so why have we got a new short break duty? Why have we got new short break regulations? This is a real continuation of the Aiming High programme, direct link back to the parliamentary hearings. For those of you who don't know the history of Aiming High, it started off with a series of parliamentary hearings in the Houses of Parliament on a cross-bench basis. We had MPs from every party listening to the stories of parents of disabled children and young disabled people themselves. They took evidence on what the state of life was pre-Aiming High. And the quote that came out of that in relation to short breaks you'll have heard long and often, which was the lack of regular, reliable short breaks was the single biggest cause of unhappiness. So Aiming High came partly as a result of those hearings, and partly as a result of that evidence, short breaks became the single biggest amount of money spent in the Aiming High programme. And from the outset, what government was keen to do was to look at how you secure long-term sufficiency and long-term development of a programme. The biggest danger even then for Aiming High was that it was seen as a three-year wonder. I don't think we could have forecast at the beginning just how difficult it was going to be at the end of it. But already at the start of it, we knew that this was a challenge. And so what the government wanted to do was it wanted to look at methods to put in place a way of preserving as much of the growth in short breaks as was possible, and also finding a way of parents and authorities working together to understand what good sufficient short breaks were. One of the earliest challenges for the programme and the work that TDC and Rita and Liz in particular led on in those early days was what actually is good. What is sufficient? What do we know and how does it work? So how do we look at that and what do we do? And at the outset of the process, the timing for the short breaks duty was already set. It was key that the duty was enacted at the end of this financial year. I do hope she's going to sort out that knocking. For those of you watching, it's not me. It's something happening out there. Okay, all right. The timing was already set, it was critical. And the reason for it coming in at the end of this financial year was despite all of the challenges we now face, currently there is more money for short breaks in the system than there has ever been. And actually holding that and holding that level of provision was critical. Obviously, what we then had to find was a parliamentary process that could enact a piece of legislation. And so when the Children and Young Persons Act started its passage through Parliament as a bill with a whole range of things in it, primarily about looked after children and the system, it became an obvious place of putting in a short breaks duty. And we did a lot of negotiation with government and with civil servants in terms of what that would look like. This is what it looks like. This is how it went into law. Now, I've left it in its legalese at the moment, but I'll explain it. And you'll see that the things that matter, and also some of the things that concern people, are the people in bold. The biggest challenge to the way that the duty is written and the way that the regulations that follow it, which I'll show you in a minute, are written, is that this is a break from caring for disabled children. Now, if we are not careful, that makes disabled children appear to be very negative. And it makes it look like we've gone back to an old world of respite. This new government might have done, we have not. Yeah? And it was also about looking at, you know, why isn't this phrased most positively? Why isn't it about outcomes for children? You know, are we going to undo all the work we've done on universal and inclusive services? And that was a concern. But actually, when you are writing a legal amendment, you have real challenges because the whole system allows you to write these things in quite limited ways. And believe me, there were some hours of negotiation behind this process to get to the amendment we've got. So what we did was we agreed the amendment as it was, and Lord Adonis and Lord Ricks took it in the House for us. But then we look at the backup, which I'll show you in a minute. OK, and this critically, to assist individuals who provide care for such children to continue to do so, or to do so more effectively by giving them breaks from caring. All right, two things in that. One, this was meant to be about not just at crisis. This was about preventative low-level support rather than crisis. The other thing this is therefore it is not an individual right to short break. This duty does not say to each family in the land, you have an individual right to short break that you can individually demand. It was more about a way of providing a series of breaks for a population. So it was modelled on the childcare sufficiency duty rather than anything else. So that's how the law was written. We were worried when the government changed that these things would change, but it didn't. And what happened last week before now, was that the short break regulations were laid in Parliament. So these are statutory regulations that show what that paragraph means in practice. They are still in the process of being debated in the House. They don't have to be debated, but basically they have to be approved by the House. And we got a wonderful email yesterday from the House of Lords committees because we were trying to track progress. I probably should have just printed it out and put it on a slide and then given you a prize for the person in the audience who had the best interpretation of what it meant. It's quite a complex process, but basically, this is now in the House. We are not expecting these regulations to change, and the Every Disabled Child Matters campaign has briefed both houses saying, please accept as they are. Yes, we could argue and make them better or whatever, but our belief at the moment is the most important thing is that these regulations go through. So, what do they say? They say that by October 2011, it was going to be the 1st of April 2011, but given all of the changes that local authorities and their partners are currently going through, that seemed rather unkind. So it is now October. Must publish a statement for parents which sets out the detail of the range of short breaks on offer locally, is clear about any criteria which eligibility is assessed under. This is this long-running saga that most of you have been involved in about the lawfulness of eligibility criteria. I'll talk to you a bit more about it in a minute. And how the range of services is designed to meet carers' needs. So why does the local authority believe that that particular range of services is going to meet needs? And that will be different, will it not, for each authority? When we look at these things, the two authorities I always have in mind are Newham and North Yorkshire. Only because their geography is so very, very different. So how you operate services in inner city Newham, which is about 4 miles by five, and how you operate services in North Yorkshire, which is 100 miles by something else, are going to be quite different. And how they explain that how needs are met in those areas are going to be quite different. So it's not prescriptive, but it's about how you do that. And, as you would expect, carers must be involved in the process of these statements being drawn up. OK, so that's statutory. That's what the law will say. What's behind it? Well, what will happen is that the government is currently developing guidance. This is practice guidance. That means it's not statutory. It's good practice. Good practice guidance, which will accompany the regulations. This is currently expected to be available to local authorities in January. There was a hope it would be available before Christmas, but as you know, the world is rather busy at the moment, and so it's not there. And the practice guidance needs to look at some things, and we've been working with a number of local authorities across England to help us with this process to get it right. What it's looking at is who, what, and how. So what do we mean by that? Let's for C. Okay. In the who, what are the key messages from practice? What are the key learning as we take forward aiming high? Emphasising corporate responsibility. There's one authority in England, in London, that spends its life with the same phraseology. And if you ever see Janet Leach from Enfield, you'll hear it within about 2 minutes. And her favourite phrase is disabled children are everybody's business. And that's the phrase we were trying to capture in this, is what is the corporate responsibility? The short break duty is not the responsibility of the disabled children's team. It's got to be the responsibility as a council of a whole. So what do libraries contribute? What do leisure services contribute? What does play and youth contribute, etc.? So trying to look at corporate responsibility. Looking again, there are a number of authorities. Wiltshire at the front of the room here is one of them, who've developed local offer approaches. And one of the things we've been interested in is looking at local offers. How do local offers work? Local offers, for those of you for whom the concept is new, are really about being able to offer families some fairly low-level services on a minimal assessment process. So being able to say, our contract with you as an authority and you as families is this. If you need more than that, we will assess you for it. But actually, as a baseline, these are the sorts of things you should expect. And what's interesting for us is they have developed differently across the country, and that's right. And that means we can draw on the evidence of how they've developed differently into guidance. The other thing that will go in this section, probably, you know, it's looking at how it fits together, is the joys of eligibility criteria. You will know there has been huge pressure on local authorities, partly, I'm afraid, provoked by the Council for Disabled Children, but it was in best interest, it was about getting clarity, since the Islington judgment came in. And a number of local authorities have fallen foul of law in terms of setting eligibility criteria which are unlawful. Now, that is not, I hasten to add, because local authorities are stupid. They're not. It is because they are not getting access to the best advice and because the law itself is unclear. So when you go and ask three lawyers in a room, please explain the difference, the relationship between Section 17 of the Children Act 1989 and Section 2 of the Chronically Sick and Disabled Persons Act 1970, you get three different answers. And what we have said to government, and the EDCM campaign issued a call for clarity document about 3 weeks ago now, is we cannot have local authorities wasting their time in courts and worried about judicial review because the government is not putting a clear message about what the law says. So one of the things we're trying to push in this guidance is about eligibility criteria. I don't know how far that will go and I don't know how clear it will be, but certainly that's the goal that we want, that there is clear guidance for local authorities to develop locally what their eligibility criteria is. And I have to say, in terms of developing eligibility criteria and working with TDC, we have seen some really good eligibility criteria coming through and some really creative eligibility criteria. We are also, however, still seeing eligibility criteria that would fall foul of legal process, and hopefully what this will do is it will stop local authorities getting trapped in that. Okay, what? Looking at the areas you're likely to cover, such as how do you match services to needs. I think I went to see the ADCS the other day and I said to him, you know, what are the things that worry you most about SEN and disability? And for special educational needs, they are worried about numbers, they are worried about system change, they are worried about meeting needs. And you will be unsurprised to know that. Maybe Julie, who's here as the chair of the Special Education Consortium, may well pick that up later. The thing they're most worried about in relation to aiming high, and you would not be surprised about this, is parental expectation. And it's about how you harness parental expectation as a force for good, rather than go and hide in your bunker and pretend that they're not out there. And some of the guidance in here, I think, which is important for parents as well as professionals, is how do we match services to need? Because that's not about saying everyone will get everything they want. It's about saying, if these are the resources we have, this is the best job we can do about it. And we also are looking at outcome-based approaches and trying to see what's out there on that. I think it's quite important to understand, if we don't know what difference we make when we make a short break, then why do we do it? How do we understand the difference that the outcome is? And are there different models of short breaks that give us different outcomes? If you take the end of it, if all else fails for some children, that's not saying for some children it isn't a positive choice, but we know there are some children who go into long-stay residential placements as not a positive choice, but as a last resort when all else fails. We know that those placements are very, very expensive, and we know actually that they tend to lead to poor outcomes for children and for families. There is no point doing that anymore, and even less point when your resources are restricted. So how much money do we put in to get the outcomes we need, and how does that work? One of the things we've found in the past, for example, is authorities tend to think parents want, you know, a big building, a residential service, or something. And actually the evidence, talking to Susan earlier of aiming high, is that's not true. What parents want are things that are regular, reliable, consistent, local, etc. So how do we do that, and how do we look at that? Looking in this again about information, I don't think we should lose the principles of the core offer. I think the principles of the core offer were as important as the money in aiming high, and taking those principles forward in relation to information, transparency, etc., I think are key, and looking at that. And then that's two, looking at a range of approaches. Again, this is not to say that in the same authorities, you would expect the same model of service or whatever. They are different. They need to be different because they are informed by parents, they're informed by locality, etc. So what are the range of approaches? And how do we make sure that all of the services that we develop support ordinary lives? Yeah? They're about building on parents' resilience. It's that central message which actually chimes with where this government is at, about, in effect, you are the parent, it is your role to take responsibility as a state, our role is to help you in that task. So what we should do should be supporting you in that task, not undermining you in that task. Nearly there, Liz, honest. Okay, how? All right, and how are we going to happen on this? Well, it's really interesting. The staff who work for TDC in the room will like this a lot, which is the role of the LAMP. Now, I know local authorities have hated the LAMP, and I know that the poor TDC staff have sweaty blood getting you to fill the thing in. Now, no one is suggesting that that level goes in the future. But one of the things it did was it gave us more data and more information than we have ever had. So what is it we have learnt in terms of data? There is nothing more powerful than being able to go and stand in front of a councillor and say, we actually know how many disabled children we have in our authority. We know what their needs are. We know what our costs are. This is what we need in order to meet our legal obligations. So looking at how we use the data, how we use the learning on data that we've had under aiming high, and how we build on it. Looking again at multi-agency approaches, this is really difficult because at the moment all of our world feels like it's been thrown in the air and we are waiting for the pieces to fall. But reinforcing the fact that when we work together we are better, I think, is key. And not surprisingly, delivering through effective participation with children and families, the biggest single cultural change from aiming high is actually the power, the involvement, the mobilisation of parents. How do we do that? How do we do that with young people, etc.? Delivering through personalisation. This government and the Minister for SEN and Disability, Sarah Tether, is very supportive of short breaks. She's also very, very supportive of personalisation approaches. And the green paper that will come out on children with special educational needs and disabilities around Christmas time will actually look in detail at personalisation options. There is no doubt that personalisation is the way forward. How we actually develop that, look at that, and deal with the challenges in it are some of the issues, but that will be there. And looking at issues of workforce. Now we've abolished CWDC. How do we make sure there is a workforce that reflects? What are the issues in it? What is the learning from across the land in terms of what we have been able to do? Okay, next steps. The guidance should contain practice examples, those local authorities that are working with us. Susan's working with us at the moment, along with a whole range of authorities, are being asked to provide practice examples, not necessarily because they are the way forward, but to give people a whole range of ideas about what works. Obviously, it's key that local authorities develop their responses in partnership with parents. We will use the National Network of Parent Carer Forums. You will hear more from them later in terms of how we support this, etc. Now, one of the challenges in the midst of all this is in June, the government issued, in the sort of rather post-election chaos, and that black box that always came up on the DfE website, which rather put you off, saying this may or may not be government policy, but actually... What came out was the new care planning placement and review regulations, the legal side of short breaks. Now, I am concerned that only, where was I? Last week somewhere, somebody asked me if they were in yet. And there are still local authorities that do not understand that these regulations are in and available, and actually they fundamentally change the balance between how we place children in short breaks. Now, the TDC team have been doing some work on that as they go around. And one of the things we've been looking at with government, I'm not quite sure, to be honest, at the moment, how far we are with that, is looking at how we support local authorities as they move towards the short break duty approach, but also how we make sure that the care planning, placement and review regulations are understood and in force. The Green Paper, like I say, due out about Christmas, will also reinforce a vision for short breaks. So all of this coming together, we hope, is painting a pattern that says, yes, aiming high is ending, and yes, we are in some political chaos as we wait for each day's announcements, but the government's commitment to short breaks and the government's commitment to children with disabilities is not changing and moves forward. And there I'll stop, I think, Liz.
Thank you very much indeed. I thought that was a great canter through both the history and where we are now and where we need to go next. So I found that really helpful. We've got about 10 minutes before we go for a break to have questions, some discussion. So if anybody wants to kick us off, please do stand up. We'll get a microphone to you. And Christine and I are very happy to field questions if we're able to do so. First volunteer. Over here, can we just get a microphone down there? And then we've got a lady here. So we just, shall we take two together? And then that's probably better than just bouncing around.
I'm Andrew Ross from the Children's Trust at Tadworth. Christine, how should carers or organisations representing carers respond when an authority, apparently aware of its statutory duties, pleads poverty?
That's a good one, isn't it? Shall we just take the other one?
It's a very similar question.
It's a very similar question. Okay.
Would you like me to take this, Liz?
I'm very happy for you. It was to you, Christy.
I mean, I think it's interesting. I think it's one of the messages we've been putting out to local authorities, really. And we've got a couple of things that might help. One of the challenges is that people don't always understand the law in relation to disabled children. We've done a piece of work at the council, which means that we've worked with a legal group of expert barristers to produce a new book called Disabled Children, a Legal Handbook, which explains the law. And that is now available. And actually, it will be on the CDC website. I'm looking at Jo, my PA. She knows these things. It's on now, is it, Jo? Okay, we've had some wonderfully challenging IT problems at NCB that you probably don't need to know about. But if Jo's nodding at me, on our website, the book is there for you to download. You don't have to download all of it, it's rather thick, but there are chapters on it you can download. But actually, while we were launching the book a few weeks ago, the barrister who is one of the people who wrote it was doing a speech at the launch called something like Cementing Services to the Floor. And it was... a quote from The Guardian, which was about local authorities deciding, I mean, I don't blame them, about saying, OK, what do we have to provide and what do we not have to provide? And some local authorities taking a decision that disabled children's services, including short breaks, were primarily discretionary and therefore they did not have to provide them. That's actually not true. and this law will help us with that. And so what we have commissioned from the barristers, and it will be with you next week, I hope, we're virtually there, is a legal paper explaining how you use the law to defend services. And I think what's really important is actually a lot of the managers in local authorities we've worked with are equally keen to defend services as the parents and carers they serve. This isn't an either or. This isn't necessarily it's about conflict, but it's a challenge for local authority managers that when you do your top 20 things that matter most in our local authority, you end up with potholes, street lighting, police numbers, etc. You do not end up with services for disabled children. So how do you as a local authority manager make the case that actually these things matter? So that should be with people next week. The other thing is that we are doing a separate piece of work, but which is complementary for parents and carers themselves. They have access to all of this on the rights of parents and how to use the law in order to support those rights. And that should be with you the week before Christmas. So I think it's about saying it's absolutely fine to be poor, but the law is the law. Tell us how you're going to meet your legal obligations.
Can I just add to that, because I think clearly that's critical and that's partly why so much work has gone on to get some legal statutory basis to the programme. The other thing, however, that's going on, I mean, Christine mentioned earlier the whole issue about evidence.
Indeed.
Evidence about outcomes and the real importance of that. In the time that we've been rolling out this programme, we have started to get some really great evidence about better outcomes. One of the things that's worrying local authorities very significantly in the moment is the pressure on their children's budgets from children being looked after.
Yeah.
What we're beginning to see is some very encouraging evidence that the investment in short breaks is actually helping to reduce the pressure on the expenditure and the numbers of children in the looked-after system. So if you're an accountant, that looks pretty great. If you're a professional person and you really want to get better outcomes for children, that's even better. So I think it's really important
Absolutely.
That this evidence flows and we're very clear about it, both in terms of the money and in terms of, more importantly, the outcomes for children. So I think we're all working away at that, and I think that's an important sort of corollary, really, and complement to the statutory framework. But I think we will see some probably quite foolish, unwise, short-term decisions through pleading poverty while local authorities sort themselves out, understand their budgets and work out what it's best to do. I hope that as we all understand the law better
yes.
and understand the evidence about outcomes better, that we will start to see some of that really starting to flow a bit better. We all have to be vigilant, I think, is the answer to that. But it's a worry.
It is
a big worry. One more question? We can take at least one more question before we go and get some refreshment. Anybody else? You're OK. Did you want to just... Well, in that case, as you booked your slot. Was there anybody else? Can I just ask so we can just collect the last? No? OK. The floor is yours.
I'm Karen Adams. I'm from Hounslow organisation called Parents in Touch, and we support families with disabled children. My question is there any route to challenge decisions on behalf of individual families through what's coming?
I don't think the roots have changed, really. I mean, I suppose for me, it's the difference between the collective and the individual, isn't it? I'd very much want to see parents' forums working collectively on some of the things that are happening to them, because I think it's a bit like, I don't know, from Lizzie's point of view, but for example, at CDC, although you get, you know, cases in the press, our position is we never comment on individual cases, and the reason we don't is we don't have the whole picture and the whole evidence picture and whatever. So I think individual cases are quite difficult. It's not to say that they're not worthwhile, it's just that they're difficult. So I think families obviously need to be clear about what their roots are in the system in relation to complaints, in relation if necessary to judicial review or whatever. But and some families will take that route and some families will succeed or not in it. But it tends to be painful for everyone concerned and it doesn't always get the results that families want. And I would far rather we were able, as much as we could, to work collectively about decisions. And one of the challenges, I think, for the sector for disabled children and for parents of disabled children is where you have difficult decisions being made, is if you're not careful, you fall back into impairment groups. So you go back to, but actually children with autism deserve this more than children with cerebral palsy, deserve this more than whatever. And actually what we know about services for disabled children is good services for disabled children are good services for all disabled children. And I think that's the real challenge at the moment, is about holding the nerve collectively rather than getting into the individual stuff. And that's my thought.
Excellent, excellent. In fact, it's not a break next, is it? I'm just checking my agenda. We're going on to the next speaker, and I think we should do that. Thank you very much,
You're
Christine.
Very welcome.
I think that was great. Can we thank Christine? Because I think that was a really good kickoff for the event.